Hi, I'm Jen.
And I'm Gina, and we're the hosts of Job Search Stories by Indeed, a podcast where we talk about the hardest parts of the job search.
This is another hot topic, the job application abyss.
A horrible place to be.
Doing a resume, I like to put off forever.
Do start working on it now.
I love that you said the trickiest questions are the ones you don't prepare for.
An interview really is a high-pressure situation.
Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or come watch it on Indeed's YouTube channel.
This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
Hello and welcome to The Rest Is Money with me, Robert Peston.
And me, Steph McGovern.
How have you been?
Yeah, good. I've been doing loads of exciting stuff, actually. So, you know, I've got this idea for another business in the fitness world. So I went to look at units where we might potentially put it over the last week in Newcastle. And it's dead exciting. I absolutely love going to look at places and imagining, you know, what it might be like bringing a business concept alive there. And there's some really cool stuff going on in Newcastle. And I've been doing some meetings with the university as well about tie-ups with some of their students in terms of developing products and things like that.
Are you allowed to?
It's too early on. Not because I'm worried anyone's going to nick it. It's just more, I don't know, I just want to wait
Is
until...
Is it a superstitious thing that you just want
to...
Yeah, I get that.
Because then it might not happen.
When I want something, I always assume it ain't going to happen, and I don't want to talk about it.
You're meant to manifest, though, aren't you? You're meant to imagine it's going to happen. Anyway, what has been happening to you?
So it's been a slightly troubled few hours because the dog at 3 a.m. decided to wake me up. There was definitely something going on outside, which I'm assuming is fox activity, but he just would not let me sleep. There was a whining. There was sort of... Anyway, so I had to... So not only did I have to let him out once, he then woke me up again 2 hours later.
To go out.
Yeah, because he wanted to see the fox off our premises. So, curse you, London foxes.
So you were having fox fights in the middle of the night, basically.
Well, he was.
Supervised by you. So we are going to answer more of your questions in this episode. Again, just a reminder, you can send them to restismoney@gmail.com or you can send them via our social media pages. Just search The Rest Is Money. So, Robert, tell us what the first question is.
So it's from Carol and... It's about a website, an e-commerce service that you love. It's called Vinted, because I know the majority of your income comes from Vinted these days, doesn't it, Steph?
Yeah, don't tell the tax man that.
Which is this site for buying and selling mostly secondhand clothes, isn't it? Is it all clothes?
Yeah, no, it's not all clothes.
But it's mostly secondhand clothes. And anyway, Carol asks, will she have to pay tax on the things that she sells on Vinted? She's been using it as a second income and it's been very helpful during the cost of living crisis, but she's anxious that the tax man is going to come after us. So what's the situation?
I understand why you are, because similarly, when this news came out a few months ago, I was also doing a bit of a deep dive in terms of my tax implications. So it all kicked off when these new rules came into place in January this year, which said online marketplaces like Vinted, Etsy, eBay, Depop, all of them, plus all the kind of gig economy sites, you know, so your Ubers, your Airbnbs, things like that, anywhere where people essentially and making money. And now, from January this year, going to have to tell the HMRC about, you know, any people making money through these platforms that they might be interested in. You know, HMRC are pretty cracking down on this. They're investing something like £40 million into looking into it and have employed a load of staff to enforce these rules. But the key to this is the rules themselves haven't changed. It's just that the HMRC are cracking down on it. So talking about Vinted, the whole thing with that, as you say, it's an app for selling clothes and bits, mainly secondhand. It's massively grown in popularity. I use it. You know, when my show ended, I was just getting rid of a load of my TV clothes that I, you know, won't really need anymore. And a lot of people panicked thinking, I'm now going to have to pay tax on it. So it is worth explaining the rules around this, because Vinted have said, they sent around like a notification telling all of their users about it. And they said they're now going to tell HMRC when someone is selling more than 30 items a year, which I mean, I've already sold 30 items, and all the stuff that they're selling adds up to more than £1,735 a year.
Did they explain why they picked that number of almost 2,000 quid?
No. They haven't said.
It seems very random, doesn't it?
It's 2,000 euros. So that's just the translation for it. But yes, they're now going to essentially tell HMRC about these people. They say they're also going to tell the people too and say to the people who are using the site, listen, we're going to tell HMRC about you. This is what you need to do to prepare for it.
And do we have any idea how many people will be affected?
Well, Vinted say not many, but, you know, just anecdotally talking to people I know, people might not hit that £2,000, you know, near enough £2,000 mark, but they'll, the 30 items thing, they will. So it's an interesting point on that one. But it is worth saying, you don't pay tax if you're selling something for less than you paid for it, which is the fundamental thing with Vinted. You know, the reason why it's done so well, it's people getting rid of stuff they've had for ages and they're trying to get rid of it. But the problem is that there's been this phenomena as well of, I mean, it's been particularly students picking up clothes in charity shops on the cheap and then selling them for more money. And that's where the tax ban is very interested.
But also, if I was being slightly paranoid as a Vinted user, the thing that would worry me is, let's say I've sold 40 or 50 items of clothing. What if the tax man says, well, you're going to have to prove that these are your clothes, yes, and you paid them for more? Because none of us, do you keep your receipts?
No, I know. Exactly. That's also been the worry. But I think they're not going for those people though. Like, it doesn't feel like that's what this is about. It is about the people who are buying and selling for more, or people who are making stuff and selling it. But we'll see, because they have to report to HMRC by the end of January next year. So that's when we're really going to see what HMRC do with all this information they've been given. It's worth saying as well, Vinted have got their own kind of breakdown of what the tax implications are. So if you are someone, and I'm assuming all the other sites have got those as well, so it's worth having a look at whichever one you use to find out exactly what they're saying on it, because they should be able to help, because it's not in their interest not to help you, is it?
And the other point, of course, is that if it's your main source of income, you have to generate profits, income of, what is it, 12,000?
12,570 quid a year, you know, is the personal income
because
tax
up to, because up to that level of income, you don't pay any income tax.
Yeah. Do you know what's interesting though, right? Because obviously I, when it all came out, I was looking into it from my own perspective as well. There's the online forum, .gov.uk. It was so complicated. Loads of people were going on there going, can you just tell me, I've made a grand selling stuff and, you know, it's just stuff I've bought, I've owned, and I'm just getting rid of things. Am I going to owe tax? It was a lot of panicked people and the responses were rubbish. It was misleading, the information, and it was getting really, really complicated. And you can see people getting more and more irate.
But are these chatbots answering, or are these real people?
I know, it's funny, I got asked that earlier. Well,
what's the answer?
I don't know, but it looks like it's not chatbots, because the name would be like HMRC admin number 7 and the next one would be HMRC admin number 10. It didn't read like a chatbot, but it could be. It's worth knowing, if you are worried about it though, a group that has a really good like flow chart and analysis on that is the Low Income Tax Reform Group. But yeah, it's worth having a look at them. One other thing I just want to tell you about selling stuff online though, you have to be really careful how you describe it. So if you describe something as well-worn or see-through, you might prompt some messages from the perverts, should we say.
So seriously?
Because there's this whole community of people who obviously get a kick from buying well-worn or whatever clothes. I mean, it's normally men buying them off women, let's be honest. But yeah, there's a brilliant article in Cosmopolitan by a journalist who this happened to, where she'd put on that she had, I think she'd said it was a worn dress. She's called Jennifer Savin. And she then went into this whole dark world, the kind of the sexual underworld of eBay and Depop, which obviously both companies would say that's not what it's for. But yes, it's a very interesting read there.
Can I ask, do people, when you're on Vinted,
yeah,
can people work out it's you?
No.
Okay.
I've purposefully done an alter ego.
Are you allowed to do that? It's interesting.
Well, I'm me by definition on, like, Vinted know exactly who I am.
Yeah.
But the person buying doesn't know it's me.
Sure.
Because I didn't want to end, well, I'm going to end up in the front of the Daily Mail for this anyway, this writ.
No, I think you're right to protect your identity. I just wasn't sure whether you were allowed to.
Yeah, no, you are allowed, well, maybe you're not. Maybe my secondhand clothing empire is about to come crashing down before me. So hopefully people won't work out it's me. Because I don't want it to go for ridiculous. I want it to just, you know, it's a decluttering thing for me. It's not really money making.
You're not doing that thing that some celebrities do, which is actually charging a massive premium because it's their stuff, as it were. No,
definitely not. That's not what it was for. This was a decluttering exercise because I have got too many clothes and I love it. I enjoy the thrill of someone paying £2 for an old jumper you've got. And then I don't love the whole locker process, but I love the joy of that. And then people barter with you. You might put something on for a fiver and then someone will come back and say £2 and you're like, you're having a laugh. And then they end up getting it for £3. It's just the sad life I lead now, Robert. But I enjoy it. I get a kick out of it.
No, I can see why.
Yeah. Right. Should we answer some more questions? Actually, we've got another one on the gig economy, which is interesting. So this one is from Laurie, and they've asked, in an economic climate where we should all be focusing on improving personal productivity, can our economy afford 0 hours contracts and the gig economy?
So I'm going to have to sort of try and interpret what Laurie means by this, because I think what Laurie is sort of getting at is, if a 0 hours person is going from different trade to different trade, different job to different job, if you're in the gig economy and you're not specializing in a particular thing, I'm assuming this, you know, what he or she is worrying about is your level of expertise, your level of skills never gets up to a certain degree of excellence, and that therefore you are less productive. I mean, there are some people in the gig economy, actually, particularly in the creative sector and in our sector, who are absolutely brilliant at what they do, world class, but actually just prefer not being tied down by, you know, an employment contract and don't particularly want to work just for a single employer. And so I don't think that you should assume that somebody who's freelance, in effect, is not productive. It's one of the reasons why, I mean, Labour, you know, the Labour Party is going into the election with a promise to give all workers greater rights from day one of employment and to crack down on the gig economy, you know, so-called. But one of the things that quite a lot of sort of Labour supporters have said to them is, actually, the gig economy suits me. And so one of the things they're trying to do at the moment is work out, how do you reform the labour market to protect the vulnerable, those people who have no employment rights, not through choice, but because they just don't have bargaining power. How do you give employment rights to the vulnerable, those who need employment rights, while not making it harder for those people who actually want to be able to go from gig to gig to have the kind of life they want?
Yeah, because to be honest, it works both ways though, doesn't it? Because there'll be some people on contracts, you know, and in full-time employment who want to do extra work, but their employer contract says they can't. So it'll work both ways on this, which actually leads me neatly to another question, which is from Dr. Joanna Rousson. Why is it only Steph who reads out the adverts? And it's because you can't, can you? Because your contract.
Yeah, no, that's right.
I'm all gig economy.
So, look, I, you know, do a variety of things in my life, but the big thing at the centre of my life is working for ITV and ITV News. They are separate organisations. And both as presenter of The Peston Show and as political editor of ITV News, there are very strict impartiality rules. And it doesn't just apply to politics, where I have to be impartial. You know, I have to be impartial when it comes to anything commercial. And so it just does, unfortunately, make it impossible for me to read out these adverts. I mean, in some ways, I have to say,
is this going to be constructive criticism for how I read out the ads?
Oh, no. Everybody knows that. Everybody knows you're absolutely brilliant at that. No, I was going to share a particular source of perhaps angst, although it isn't really for me, which is a number of years ago, I noticed that presenters of our programmes like This Morning were making an absolute fortune by being sponsored by the likes of Marks and Spencer, right? Mm-hmm. And the program itself gets sponsored, but so do the individuals, right? So Holly, as I recall, when she was the star presenter, I mean, I think Marks and Spencer paid her an absolute fortune to wear their schmutter, right?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's right. And so obviously I immediately thought, well, why can't I do that on the Peston Show? Why can't, you know, some maker of world-class schmutter, you know, whistles and whatnot, ask me to wear their suits? And it turns out that because I'm a current affairs program, it's against the rules. It's against Ofcom rules. So there are just all sorts of restrictions. I mean, and actually, truthfully, when I thought about it, I thought, yeah, of course that's right. I mean, it would be ridiculous if a program like mine was, you know, sponsored either by a clothing company or indeed, we have talked a bit about gambling and gambling sponsorship. It would be probably a political betting outfit would quite like to sponsor Peston, but you know, no way, it's against the rules.
Yeah, well, it's interesting that because when we launched my show on Channel 4, which ran for 4 years, we had that whole debate about whether to be current affairs or not, because you're right, as soon as you are current affairs, the Ofcom rules are entirely different, but we wanted to have sponsors and things. So when it came to, you know, I'm a journalist, so I do a lot of news and current affairs. We had to be really careful about how we treated each topic so that we didn't stray into too much current affairs, which was a really interesting at times when massive things were happening and I was wanting to explain them, we really had to not cross that line.
No, it is interesting, and there's money at stake in these distinctions.
Yeah.
So there we are. We've revealed why there is a slightly weird structure to the show in that sense. So I think this is probably quite a good moment for our listeners to remind themselves how brilliant you are at reading out those adverts. And so let's go to a quick break.
Hi, I'm Jen.
And I'm Gina. And we're the hosts of Job Search Stories by Indeed, a podcast where we talk about the hardest parts of the job search.
This is another hot topic, the job application abyss.
A horrible place to be.
Doing a resume, I like to put off forever.
Do start working on it now.
I love that you said,
the trickiest questions are the ones you don't prepare for.
An interview really is a high pressure situation.
Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or come watch it on Indeed's YouTube channel.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
When was the last time I took a road trip? How many national parks could I hit in 2 weeks? What about hotels? Wait, hey, Erica, how much am I spending on travel?
When your questions about life turn into questions about money, there's Erica, the virtual financial assistant to help you spend, save, and plan smarter. Only from Bank of America. What would you like the power to do? Erica is only available in the English language. You must download the latest version of the mobile banking app, only available on select mobile devices. Your chat may be recorded and monitored for quality assurance. Message and data rates and additional terms may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome back to The Rest is Money with me, Robert Peston.
And me, Steph McGovern. So we have a question here, which is to do with how inflation is calculated. This one's from San, and it says, I've got some questions about UK inflation. Am I right in thinking that house prices are not included in the inflation calculation? If I understand correctly, the US creates an owner's equivalent rent, which is artificial. I think that gets included in the US inflation number. Is that right? So why don't the UK include house prices in inflation using a similar construct?
So the answer is they do. We do in the UK. You're right. In America, they do this calculation where they sort of look at house prices and they say, well, what's the rent equivalent of that? And then they build that into the inflation number. And there are two measures of inflation in the UK. One is the consumer price index, which is the one that actually most of us talk about when we're, you know, looking at what's happening to the cost of living. And it's also the one that the Bank of England focuses on mostly when it's setting interest rates. So that's just straight CPI or consumer price inflation. But there is another one which the ONS itself, that's the Statistics Authority, actually prefers, and it is called CPIH. H for housing. And that includes the equivalent of that American housing calculation. It includes something called owner occupiers housing costs. And that does contain an element of what the ONS thinks is happening to rentals, and not just straight rentals, but notional rentals on the value of private properties. And it includes an element of council tax. So, you know, there is a measure here. The ONS would say it's actually the more reliable measure of inflation. But for what it's worth, it's not the one that most of us talk about when we talk about inflation.
Yes, excellent.
Now, economic zones are massively in the news because both of our political parties are committed to them in different forms. They've got different kinds of names. And we got a question about economic zones from Ian P. And he'd like to know more about them. He wants to know who benefits. Do courts have jurisdiction there? Do they have private police forces? Who owns the land? And basically, he just wants to know, when you hear the government talking about things like freeports, which I'm assuming is what he's talking about when he talks about an economic
zone, or enterprise zones.
What do we mean by that?
Yes. So, no, they don't have their own police or anything like that. But
they are still part of the UK, aren't they?
Yeah, they are still part of the UK. It's basically about tax, isn't it? It's about incentives to encourage more trade there. So these will often be areas which have been identified as needing more investment, needing to create more jobs for that particular area.
So you've got a big one in your neck of the woods?
Yes. So we have got the Tees Port, Freeport, which has been in the news a lot because there was lots of controversy about the running of it. But that has all been solved, it would seem, although some people might disagree with that. But either way, this is an area where you basically get tax breaks and government support to encourage businesses to set up there. But the problem, and we've talked about this, Robert, is does it encourage new businesses to be created, creating new jobs, or are you displacing people and businesses from other parts of the country?
Yeah, it's the cannibalization versus, you know, creation argument. And, you know, if, as you say, all that's happening is, you know, a business that has a site in one part of the UK simply moves to Teesside because of the tax breaks, then Teesside's gain is some other area's loss, as you say. So what we're all going to be looking at, you know, over the coming years in particular, is whether we're getting investment, particularly from overseas. You know, are overseas businesses coming here for the first time to go into these freeport areas? Or are, you know, big British investors creating brand new businesses in these areas? And I mean, as yet, we don't know the answer. I mean, I suppose what I would argue is if you within a freeport can create a genuine cluster of businesses in a particular industry and they reinforce each other, you know, in terms of skills and expertise, and that then leads to greater wealth creation, even if some of that involves displacement from another part of the UK. Two things. One is the UK net will be better off because you're creating value that in addition to the value that was already there. And so cannibalization in itself is not as simple to understand as you might think. And also there are sort of social factors. You know, some would say we would be a happier society if some of the incredibly productive businesses in London and the South East actually existed in the North East, yes, as it were, and there'd be less social tension. Yeah. And we don't tend to put a value on social tension, but it's big and it's negative. So even if you are encouraging some businesses to relocate, in terms of the cohesion of the UK, it's not necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah, yeah. And interestingly, like, because obviously I've been keeping a really close eye on what's been happening with the Teesside one. So Teesside Freeport is going to be Britain's biggest freeport out of them all, because there were 12 places given this status in 2021. And it covers a massive area. It's something like 4,500 acres, which I am told is the equivalent of 2,500 football pitches. They reckon, the team running this, that it's going to bring in 18,000 jobs to the area and give a £3.2 billion boost for the economy. So if that happens, you can really see it making a big difference. But just coming back to Ian's question on this, it's an area which exists outside of the country's borders for tax purposes, but not in any other sense. So,
it's not a country within a country.
No, it isn't. But there are lots of incentives. So like no stamp duty, no business rates, rebates for investment in construction and machinery, that type of thing. But yeah, I'm sure we will come back to talking about them as we see more being generated from them or whatever happens next. And there's one other question which I wanted to answer, which is something, especially if you're starting in a new job, you will face the hell of the tax code and, you know, potentially being put on an emergency tax code while they sort things out. And so Gavin has asked a question about, can you explain what tax codes are and, you know, I guess how you work them out? And it's a good one because it is really complicated. So I was having a look at all the different tax codes on the government's website, and just to let you know, this is obviously so that the HMRC can work out how much tax you should pay.
The codes apply when you are an employee.
Yes.
If you're self-employed, you don't have a tax code. So this is about how much tax your employer takes from your weekly or your monthly income.
Yeah. And just looking at the list, I would read it out to you, but we'll be here all day. But basically on the site, they've got what all the letters mean at the beginning. So L means you're entitled to the standard tax-free personal allowance. M means marriage allowance, which means you've received a transfer of 10% of your partner's personal allowance. T means your tax code includes other calculations to work out your personal allowance. It's basically totally indecipherable trying to work out which one is you by going on this. But it's your employer who's meant to do this, isn't it, with the tax man? It's, you know, you're not meant to work out your code. You're kind of just told your code at the end of all this.
But you can challenge it. I mean, I think the important is, I think the thing to be aware of is, you know, sometimes mistakes are made because HMRC has the wrong information. Your employer might have given them the wrong information. Or if you filled in a self-assessment form, you know, they may have picked something up from that which you disagree with. So it's, they always send you a letter saying this is your tax code, and they do explain normally why they've calculated that you're entitled to this allowance and why it's changing. And it is always, in my experience, worth just reassuring yourself that what they are saying about your income and about your expenses are, you know, that is correct.
Yeah. But I do wonder, though, why is it that the emergency tax code always means you end up paying more tax than you should? It never works the other way, does it? As everyone will know at some point, I bet you've been on an emergency tax code.
We've all been there.
Yeah. Right. Should we wrap things up then? Thank you so much for all the questions you've sent in to us. Do keep them coming. Restismoney@gmail.com is the email address, or you can send them through our social media pages. And we've got a bit of exciting news to tell you. We've now got a newsletter that you can subscribe to, which will give you lots of information about the podcast, won't it?
Yeah, the great thing about it is if there's any subject we've talked about where you want to dig in deeper, we'll include links to intelligent reading on all of this, and also point you just towards other relevant stories. So we hope you enjoy it.
Yeah, and you can subscribe to that through our social media platforms. It'll give you the details, whichever one you follow or however you get this podcast, there will be information there. Or have a look in the episode description box.
Great conversation, Steph, and see you next week.
Yeah, I'm off to sell a few more things on Vinted. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.